Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Tuesday was primary day for three states, Kentucky, New York, and Virginia, and officials in all three have been trying to learn from states that have already had their primaries about how to make voting work during a global pandemic. Let's zoom in on a bluegrass state first. That's the sound of frustrated voters banging on the doors at the only polling station in Louisville. And as predicted, some voters were standing in long lines due to polling station closures. Here to talk us through what happened there is Joshua Douglas, election law professor at the University of Kentucky and author of Vote for Us, How to Take Back Our Elections and Change the Future of Voting. Joshua, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So a lot of people saw the clip that we pulled that sound from of folks banging on the windows and the doors trying to get into a polling station. Tell us what happened there. What was going on there?
Well, that was really unfortunate at the very end of the polling hours last night when basically the polls closed at 6 and there were parking congestion around the expo center. And when they tried to close the doors to the polling place, obviously a handful of voters were still outside. But note that lines actually in Louisville were very short throughout the day up until that moment. And so that was a really terrible end to the closing period. Now, all those voters were allowed to vote eventually.
Josh, we see a lot of folks saying to people, even if your polling place closes at a certain time, 6 p.m. does feel early for a polling place to close, but that as long as you're standing in line, you're able to vote. Is that what happened for those voters yesterday in Kentucky?
Well, there was some confusion about what it means to be standing in line, I guess. And on the ground, the election officials believed that you had to be inside the doors to get in line. And there were people kind of rushing from the parking lot because there was traffic congestion right around the parking lot. So there was an injunction filed. A judge did order them to keep the polls open till 6:30 so that any of those voters who were basically right outside the door were able to get in. But that is the law in Kentucky. If you're in line by 6 o'clock, you're allowed to vote. The question was, were those voters technically in line?
So these questions of whether someone is technically in line, I mean, that sort of feels like we're teetering on thin ice here because there are lots of concerns across the country, particularly after we saw Georgia voters at their primary a couple weeks ago, just really in terms of allowing folks their ability to vote. And I'm wondering if you can tell us, first of all, why were there so few polling places to begin with? I mean, wasn't there a court ruling that limited the number of polling places?
Well, not a court ruling that limited. There was a challenge asking to open more polling places, and that was denied. What the state did is they moved to no-excuse absentee balloting, so anyone was able to vote by mail, and that was a first for the state. Kentucky has very restrictive voting laws, and typically we don't have any no-excuse absentee balloting, so you need to have an excuse to vote by mail. We typically have no early voting, and they opened up 2 weeks of early voting, and the whole goal was to try to minimize the amount of in-person voting needed because of the coronavirus. And so the state was really trying to funnel as many people to these alternative voting processes and at the same time reduce the potential spread of the virus by limiting the number of polling places. Now, it obviously wasn't enough. They should have tried to find a way to open additional polling places, but that was the goal. And what we saw is almost everywhere around the state, with the exception of Lexington, the lines were actually very, very short.
Josh, we won't have much information about results or turnout for the primary. A big reason for that is because of the mail-in ballots. What numbers so far do we have?
Well, we have some data based on the in-person vote in some counties. Lexington released some numbers, especially for the Democratic primary between Amy McGrath and Charles Booker. And so far, Charles Booker looks like he's doing very well with respect to the in-person voting. But those numbers are very preliminary, again, because we have thousands upon thousands of absentee ballots that are still being delivered. And, you know, the other important thing to note is that as long as ballots were postmarked by yesterday for Election Day, they can count once they arrive at the county clerk's office by Saturday via the U.S. Postal Service. So we have a whole lot of ballots still coming in. And we won't know the actual results until next week.
So, Josh, you mentioned the Booker-McGrath race to face Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in November. What did we see there?
Well, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see who wins that race. There was a lot of enthusiasm for Charles Booker towards the end of the campaign. Again, if we just look at the in-person voting totals in some places, and including Lexington, the second largest city, you see a lot of support for Booker. Then the question becomes, you know, how does that look as against Mitch McConnell? I suspect it'll be the most expensive race in the country, whoever wins. You know, Kentucky's a very Republican state with a lot of support for Donald Trump. And with Trump on the top of the ticket, I think Mitch McConnell is going to be difficult to defeat. But, you know, there's a lot of time between now and November, and especially if one of these candidates can have a lot of enthusiasm from the urban centers of the state. We'll see what happens.
Kentucky state legislators also passed a voter ID law earlier this year. Those laws have had their own share of controversy. Some consider them obstructions to getting folks to the polls. What effect did that voter ID law have on this primary? And are we concerned about the law come November for the presidential elections?
The law explicitly does not go into effect till November. So the only effect would be if people had heard about it and were concerned or confused about whether it was in effect and then didn't show up to vote. I am very concerned about its potential effect for November when it's set to be used. I advocated very strongly both to make the law as reasonable as possible, to put some changes, and then also just against the law as a general matter. Now, I will say that because of some of the details of the law that I and others helped to put in, it's much more reasonable than some of the other photo ID laws around the country, like in Wisconsin and Texas. That said, I still am very concerned about the potential disenfranchising effect, especially to minority communities. There's been a lawsuit filed already, and I'm hopeful that the court will at least put the law on hold for November, because I think it's ridiculous to impose additional hurdles on the right to vote and to expect people to find IDs at a time when we're still trying to socially distance, government offices aren't open, etc.
And also, you mentioned transportation, actually getting to the polls. So we're going to be keeping an eye on Kentucky. Joshua Douglas, election law professor at the University of Kentucky and author of Vote for Us, How to Take Back Our Elections and Change the Future of Voting. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Nazima. This was fun.